Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up a bit later in today's show, Chuck Lura brings us another natural North Dakota. As March begins, signs of spring start to emerge across the state, from migrating waterfowl to budding trees, and Chuck clues us in on what to watch for. Rick Gion stops by with another edition of Prairie Plates. We'll talk about winter food events that have happened in the Fargo-Moorhead area that bring the community together during the colder months, and we air another episode of The Tell. And we begin Main Street today with Mike Fralick. Welcome back to Main Street, Mike. You were with us just a week ago on Prairie Plates, and now we're going to talk about something wholly different, but welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Want to remind our listeners that Mike is the founder and co-owner and head of brewery operations at Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck. Mike and I are going to discuss today the idea of offering THC-infused beverages, perhaps in North Dakota breweries and bars sometime down the road, and there's a lot, I think, left on the road to get there, so to speak, Mike. And I want to begin there. Why is this important for you to go down this road, to hope that one day you can offer THC-infused beverages?
Well, we've got customers asking about it. There's a market for it. It's available for sale in every state around us, and including the provinces in Canada. This won't be in an alcoholic beverage. This is going to be strictly a non-alcoholic beverage, but it would be infused with a hemp-derived THC product known as Delta 9 versus just a straight-up cannabis THC-derived product. We're not a legal state for recreational cannabis, but we are a legal state for hemp production. And that's where we're seeing it a lot of across the United States, is states that looking at hemp products and value-added products from hemp, giving farmers an option for that. And then from us, for a brewer standpoint, giving us the option to look at infusing that in beverages. We get a lot of our customers asking for things that aren't beer, whether it's non-alcoholic, whether it's cider, whether we're looking at some ready-to-drink cocktails or things like that. There's just a move towards away from alcohol in some senses to some more beverages that might not give you a hangover after you've had a couple of them for the day. And so we're looking at expanding into that market. How do we offer customers things that they want here, and how we go forward?
Is it illegal right now to offer hemp-derived THC products in North Dakota?
It is illegal to do that. The legislative intent of the bill, it's not specifically designed in law, but the last session in 2023, when they brought hemp-derived products of availability, the legislative intent during testimony was to say that they did not want this to be used for recreational purposes. So that's why we were trying to go back to the legislature this session. We originally had a bill that we would change the definition of beer and allow us to, as breweries and tap rooms, to create hemp-derived THC beverages. We looked at it in that framework just to try to keep the over 21 framework in place, because this is a product that would be sold to people over 21. So how do we keep that regulated in a market where, so alcoholic wholesalers have that market and to retailers and stuff like that. So we looked at like putting it under the same framework that the breweries and brew pubs, the brew tap rooms and the brew pub licenses have, and being able to manufacture that under that same deal, under that same premise, and allow that to get into the retail customers' hands via wholesalers that are distributing alcohol right now.
So Mike, give me a lesson here. I think everyone listening knows what it means to get drunk or to have a couple drinks and feel whatever it is that they feel. Can one become drunk, and I'm using that in air quotes because I don't know what it's called, drinking these THC-infused products?
Yeah, you're definitely going to have an altered state. I mean, it might not be the same as, say, getting high off of a cannabis products, but you are going to have a level of that kind of high feeling. You don't have the hangover effects like you do with alcohol. But yeah, you're going to have to definitely imbibe this responsibly, just like any other beverages out there. You don't want to overdose on anything are over-consumed, to say. So yeah, there's going to be some raising awareness on that, but these products are going to be highly regulated. They are sent to a lab to make sure dosing is proper. And we're looking at the Hemp Beverage Alliance in Minnesota as a resource to say, you know, they've developed some kind of best practices about dosing rates and amount of servings per can. So, I mean, we're looking at around a 5 milligram dosing rate and then having a maximum of 2 servings per can. So you'd have a can with 10 milligrams. That's not going to get you wasted. Depending on your level of tolerance for cannabis derived products or THC hemp derived products, you're going to have a little effect from this. You might have a second beverage and get a little more, but it's not going to be like you're pounding a 6-pack of these things. So
is 5 milligrams from a hemp derived THC the same as 5 milligrams from a cannabis derived THC product?
Yeah, it would be. The milligrams dosage would be, I mean, the hemp derived product takes a lot more hemp to create that same amount because the hemp, the THC in hemp is really small versus, say, cannabis, where you can have some really high potency rates nowadays with new strains that are out there, and especially new products derived from those strains, whether it's edibles or vape cartridges or things like that, the concentrations can be way higher than what we're looking at for this. So
I've seen these ads float by my Facebook feed. It looks like I can click on those suckers and order it right to my house today, but maybe that would be against the law to do so in North Dakota.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know who's going to be checking your fridge, but I know they're for sale in Minnesota, and I know people in North Dakota have them in their fridges right now. I mean, there's warehouses in North Dakota in Fargo currently that our wholesalers have that are selling these products into Minnesota. They're making money on it on as a North Dakota wholesaler. They cannot sell them into North Dakota, but they are profiting from the sale of these beverages. So we've just got to try to figure out how we keep our tax dollars here and how we keep jobs here by being able to bring that manufacturing here to North Dakota and allowing consumers to purchase it here rather than traveling across state lines, whether it's South Dakota, Montana, or Minnesota, and spending their dollars there and tax revenue going there.
This little irony here of we can store it and sell it from North Dakota, but we can't sort and sell it in North Dakota. Is this something that you believe will have an economic benefit for places like you have at Laughing Sun Brewing, the state, communities, because of tax dollars? You mentioned that a moment ago.
Absolutely. I mean, for us, it's we get a lot of people asking about it. A lot of other breweries have the same things going on with customers asking for and having purchased things outside of there. If you've been a concert at Blue Stem Amphitheater, for instance, you can buy those beverages right at the concert. And almost every brewery in Minnesota currently has one of these products or edibles or something like that. It's been a big boon for Minnesota breweries just as because there's a declining beer market out there. People are drinking less alcohol, but people are looking for alternatives. And in some cases, this can be 30 and 40% of the revenue of a brewery in Minnesota. So for us, we are always looking at ways to diversify our portfolio, give us ahead of some curves, whether it's if we're trends in beer drinking less, or people are drinking less beer, or people are changing their lifestyle habits with sober October, dry January, things like that. How do we combat those things in an industry that produces alcohol? Well, maybe we can produce something other than alcohol, and looking at these kind of beverages to be one of those options.
We're enjoying our conversation with Mike Freilich. He's the founder and co-owner and head of brewery operations at Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck. We're talking about potentially offering THC infused beverages at some time down the road here in North Dakota. People, I think, understand the health risks of consuming alcohol. Is it your position that it's more healthy to consume THC infused beverages? Is that something you're promoting, or do you not know enough to say that right now?
I mean, I would hesitate to say like for exact that it's going to be healthier. I do know that these kind of beverages aren't going to give you that same hangover effect that you do with alcohol. So there could be some benefits that way. The benefits of cannabinoids and THC and things like that in the health area are still being, I think, still being determined. I do believe there's benefits in there, but I can't say exactly from a medical standpoint that they do have benefits. But I think, you know, you see CBD oils and things like that being able to take care of a lot of different things in all over sorts of different health aspects, whether it's anxiety or whether it's just a general health benefit. So I think there's some still the words that there's not a definitive out on that yet, but I think the more you see it, the more you're going to find that there are going to be some health advantages to some of these things, maybe versus alcohol. Alcohol doesn't tend to get a lot of good press. You know, you might have some heart conditions and things like that, that maybe a glass of wine or a beer a day might help you out with, but not too many people are telling you to go out there and drink a bunch of beers as a health note. So,
what challenges do you anticipate, Mike, in developing these THC infused beverages? We jokingly chatted about your R&D department last week relative to hamburgers, but I've got to believe that there are going to be some challenges here that then would need to align with Laughing Sun's brand and quality standards, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's got to be quality. Otherwise, we're not going to make it. It would definitely go to a lab to test the, as far as the safety concerns, as dosing rates and making sure all the things are proper there. But I guess the biggest challenge is there's people doing this out there already, and there's giant corporations doing this out there. For us, it's going to be trying to get into a market late with the legislative action or inaction that we had this time. We're going to be another 2 years behind the ball here. So getting into a market late, trying to, push that local aspect of our market that we do with beer, we're going to be in the same effect in this THC market with the hemp-derived beverages, because there's a lot of giant conglomeration corporations out there that are doing this. And so how do we compete in that market as a small player producing quality products? But you know, we're up against the big guys again. So
Mike, you testified last week before a committee of the North Dakota legislature. What did they tell you?
There wasn't quite an appetite for a bill this time, so we brought it about as a study, and we did get support from six or seven sponsors to bring that. During the committee hearing, there was some support, especially because people see this coming. Some legislators were supportive of the idea because it was about how do we create the regulatory framework? How do we create the taxation stuff? So when this does come in 2 years, the people are going to have an idea of how it could work, what things that we would have to work through. That's already going to be developed. Right now, we're going to come back next session with none of that in place other than our own research. Because we had some legislatures that felt like we don't want to do this. It was that's not the design of the hemp derived products. And we got some pushback in committee because this isn't something they want to see in North Dakota. It was mainly some of the older legislators and the committee that were having that feeling. So we got a 6-6 do not pass and a 6-6 do pass. There was one. If we would have had one person not missing on the committee, I think it would have passed 7-6 with a do pass recommendation on the floor. But as it was, it came out of committee with no recommendation. And the person carrying the bill was someone that was definitely not supportive of us in the committee and was talking about that this wasn't designed to be a recreational product. So maybe if we get a little more support and raise a little more awareness about these beverages and the fact that they are all around us and the tax dollars and the jobs that it's created, maybe we can get some more support next time. We're hoping to do so. And we're definitely going to start laying the groundwork well before the session to get that on board. Our wholesaler partners are on board already, and I spoke to them. So maybe we can get them to commit in session two to be part of that and testify with us.
Did you notice that there was a geography flavor in how this thing ended up with essentially a tie. Was there more support from Eastern North Dakota legislators and less support from Western-based North Dakota legislators?
I believe so. I mean, we had sponsors for the bill and people speaking about it, in especially on the testing side, that were all from Fargo, Moorhead areas. With that, they see it, people going across the river and doing that. It's kind of the same thing, you know, in our local states when the Montana or when Mandan and Bismarck were in different time zones and people driving across the river to go have a beer later for one more hour. We're seeing the same thing on this. It's just people are driving across the river to Minnesota to do it, or South Dakota to purchase that. So it's gonna take some awareness and training on our part to raise the issue and raise the awareness of that issue.
Do you anticipate a change in your insurance requirements? And are you doing anything now to navigate potential changes in either insurance or licensing requirements that will be on your plate relative to THC-infused products?
Well, we'll probably be doing some server training, just like we do with our bartenders now, with alcohol training and not over-serving. We would definitely be looking at the same kind of serving training for that, like being able to recognize the signs of maybe someone being intoxicated too far with these kind of beverages. Insurance-wise, we have a lot of Minnesota brewers and breweries across the nation that are allowed to do this. So it's not like we're creating the wheel again. We're going to be able to work off of their previous efforts to be able to do that. Our insurance, we have a good insurance company with the axe throwing lanes that we have now. That was quite a thing to get insurance for that, and financials and all the other things that it took to get that, the whole statement and company education that the insurance company did on us before they would insure us. So I feel like we're in a good position insurance wise. But yeah, we're not the first ones to do this. So we have the advantage of other states doing this and being able to lean on some of their efforts just to know the groundwork that they've done and be able to use that.
This has obviously also been discussed at the federal level. Do you anticipate any federal input here? Have you chatted with North Dakota's representatives in Congress? Do they have a feel for what it is you're trying to do?
I haven't reached out to any of our delegation as of yet. We've kind of kept it as a state issue for now, but I mean, it's recreational cannabis is legal in 24 states, I believe, and medical is legal in nearly all of them in the high 40s numbers. If you look at some of the arguments that are out there right now for these beverages, is you have a lot of veterans groups and things like that that are, people are using these beverages. They may have a medical card for cannabis, but sometimes it can be cost ineffective to be able to do that, where these beverages can provide a small level of THC through that hemp-derived stuff, but can still give you some benefits that if you have PTSD or some anxiety and things like that, these beverages are helping people out. So there's a bunch of groups that are speaking up to say like, hey, don't take these away from me. These are part of my medicine. So I think we're going to see that kind of expand a bit, talking about the benefits of it in that way. People that use cannabis as a medical level are going to see these products as a possibility to entry into a market that maybe is a little cheaper that way.
When you look at the population of our state, legislators, people that you serve, others that you have visited with this about, what are myths that you continually encounter that you would like to dispose of?
Well, there's always that myth of reefer madness, or, you know, it's getting knocked down daily as we go along. I think there's more cannabis users out there than ever before. There's more people using CBDs and alternative medicines, holistic kind of things that are out there trying to treat diseases rather than just the next pill or the next, quick medicine. So I think there's a growing kind of constituent that way, but yeah, it's going to take some education. We're going to have to keep moving forward this.
Do you see yourself as ultimately having success here, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the headways are of a national movement are there. So I think that the more people this gets in front of, the more around that it's on the market, the more jobs that it's creating. In Texas, I heard a number that it's kind of like North Dakota. They didn't legalize hemp-derived products to make them recreational, but they found a loophole there. And now that's 48,000 jobs in Texas that are dedicated to this industry. And so I think you're going to see that keep growing. And I think people are going to start understanding, especially legislators, that this is a business issue. It's a business bill. We are losing revenue out there right now to states all around us, and we're losing jobs to states that are all around us in the manufacturing industry. And so how do we diversify these breweries? Beer's in a tight space right now. There's less people drinking beer. You know, you can see all of the numbers declining in beer sales. So how do breweries stay alive? We're vital pieces of everybody's community that we live in. I mean, there's a brewery in almost every big city in North Dakota, and I would say that they're a big part of their community with the things that they provide, whether it's music or places to gather or events like that. And how do we keep our breweries vital, and how do we keep them vibrant? And this product might be another way to diversify our portfolio and diversify others to be able to make sure that we stay relevant.
If people want to learn more about this subject, Mike, do you have any place where they can go?
Right now, I guess if you wanted to see some of the guidelines, I would point you towards the Hemp Beverage Alliance that's in Minnesota. They're a good resource for the ideas that we're trying to look at. If you want to know how they taste, go to one of our surrounding states and you can try one out. Go to a concert, go to a bar, and you can see them in everywhere around us. So there's an easy for you to do market research if you want to go out and try them. You can't get them here yet, but you can read about them all over online.
My guest has been Mike Frelick, the founder, co-owner, and head of brewery operations at Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck. We've been discussing the complexities of introducing THC-infused products here in North Dakota. Mike, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Craig. Really appreciate it.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. As March begins, signs of spring start to emerge across North Dakota. From migrating waterfowl to budding trees and the return of sharp-tailed grouse to their dancing grounds, Chuck Lura shares with us what to watch for as this season shifts, plus a special celestial event to look forward to this month on this natural North Dakota.
Are you ready for spring? March 1st is the first day of meteorological spring, while the spring equinox, which marks the first day of astronomical spring, is coming up on March 20th. As that old saying goes, if March comes in like a lamb, it goes out like a lion, then vice versa. But perhaps more accurately, to paraphrase Forrest Gump, March is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. The weather may be variable, of course, ranging from snowstorms to thunderstorms. But by the end of the month, some observations may be expected to exemplify the inexorable march toward summer. Expect to see some rivers and streams and prairie potholes with open water again, and waterfowl such as Canada geese, pintails, and mallards begin to show up on area marshes. By the end of the month, one may also expect to see a few robins and other birds as well. Plus, a sound similar to that of someone blowing across the top of a pop bottle may begin to be heard on the grasslands around dawn near the end of March. That's a sure sign that the male sharp-tailed grouse are out on their dancing grounds trying to impress the ladies. Toward the end of the month, particularly in the southern counties, pussy willows may start sporting their catkins, and some trees may appear to be budding out. Actually, it's their drab, wind-pollinated flowers that develop first. Out on the prairies, the passiflower and other spring wildflowers may also start coming into bloom. There's a full moon coming up on March 14th. It's known as the crust moon, a reference to the surface crust of snow that often is prominent during March. It's also known as the crow moon and sap moon. And please note that there'll also be a total lunar eclipse on the late evening hours of the 13th and early morning hours of the 14th. It'll likely be announced on local news and weather reports as the time approaches. March can often be a bumpy ride, and time will tell how the signs of spring will develop this March. But the signs of spring are in the air, and there should be ample opportunity to get out and enjoy a little bit of the change of seasons, whatever the weather. and give some consideration to staying up late and watching a bit of the lunar eclipse. I'm Chuck Lara.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. You can get Natural North Dakota essays delivered to your inbox every week. Sign up for the email newsletter at prairiepublic.org.
That was Chuck Lura, who has a broad knowledge of Natural North Dakota and loves sharing that knowledge with others. Lura was a longtime biology professor at Dakota College at Botineau, publishing research on ecological aspects of grasslands in the northern Great Plains. In retirement, he continues to share his Natural North Dakota essays for the Prairie Public audience. Coming up in the second half today, Rick Guillon stops by for another edition of Prairie Plates. Rick and I will chat about winter food events in the Fargo-Moorhead area that brought the community together during these colder months. There was diverse offerings, and Rick and I will run down the list. Plus, another edition of The Tell. All that's ahead right after this.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Nicole's Fine Pastry and Cafe at 13 South 8th Street in Fargo, serving pastry, lunch, and wine with a second location at Brewhalla. Nicole'sFinePastry.com.
I like bagels.
Have some salad.
All I eat is pizza.
Eat some barbecue.
Apple sauce and some nice red beets.
There's the music we look forward to each and every Wednesday here on Main Street. Of course, it's Prairie Plates with Rick Guillon. Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Craig. How are you?
I am hanging in there, as you can tell from my voice. It's a little different, I think. But hopefully we'll get through the interview and enjoy our time here on Prairie Plates. Rick, you've attended a variety of winter food events in the Fargo-Moorhead area this season. What is it about these events that makes them so special for the community?
I think it's that word you just use. It's community. It's people coming together. There isn't a whole lot going on this time of year. So yeah, it's a community event. It brings people together of all walks of life. These events are not that expensive. And so they're really accessible to folks. And you're talking about, you know, chili cook-offs, pancake carnivals, hot dish festivals, certain things like that. They're just a lot of fun, and it brings everyone together and everyone has a good time. And it's just a lot of fun in the Fargo-Moorhead area.
So with so many different types of cuisine featured in these events, did anything surprise you in terms of flavors or creativity?
I think the same flavors are apparent year after year in certain events, such as the Kiwanis Pancake Carnival here in town at the Fargo Dome. They serve 7,000 people this year, and that's their thing, is having really good pancakes and really good sausage. And it's just the same formula every year. Sometimes with these chili cook-offs, you can really get some good flavors. The one at Swing Barrel Brewing in Moorhead last Thursday, Chef Joe, who we had on a couple weeks ago, had a really fun chili. It was a braised beef cheek, bison chili Colorado, a lot of different chiles, dried chiles involved in that. I think a little chocolate, a little cinnamon. You know, he's a chef. He'll throw in a few different things here or there. And the Hot Dish Festival at Brewhalla in early February had a lot of interesting flavors there, too, with some of the winners. And it was really interesting to kind of get in and talk to some of those chefs after the event and see how they made some of that stuff and just talk to them a little bit about the ingredients used, because I did find out some pretty interesting things.
The secrets. Rick, you were at the opening of the Moorhead Dairy Queen on March 1st. That's always a big deal. I drove by with my grandson. We didn't stop the line. Oh my gosh, it was long.
And I was at a Swedish pancake feed before that, decided to go get some ice cream about 11 o'clock, and it was cold then, 19 degrees, wind chilled. Found some friends, though, stood in line, got a big cone. I'll get an upgrade in a few weeks, but I just like the visual of the big cone for my Facebook food page. Yeah, that event is a lot of fun. That Dairy Queen opened in 1949. They have some of the original recipes from certain items, and just a long-lasting tradition in Moorhead. Opening day is March 1st. They serve thousands of people. It's largely successful. Social media booms. I mean, every post they do about the opening gets over 1,000 likes, and it's just a big, another community event for people just to kind of come out and see what's going on and in the middle of winter and have some fun.
The Moorhead Dairy Queen, home of the Dilly Bar.
Exactly.
Rick, you talked about going to the Moorhead Masonic Lodge for the Swedish pancake breakfast. What is a Swedish-style pancake?
It's more like a crepe, Craig. It's a little more eggy. It's thin. These Swedish pancakes are much larger than what I'm used to. Usually they're, I don't know, 4 inches, 6 inches. These are large, and I ate six of them, and I came out of there stuffed, and you get all-you-can-eat Swedish pancakes at this event, and it's a lot of fun. You won't leave hungry. They also have sausage, eggs, juice, coffee, all-you-can-eat Swedish pancakes for $10. And it's a heck of a deal.
Sounds good to me. Rick, you've also been to the Winter Red River Market. Any vendors or products stand out to you?
I really like Saigon cuisine. It's a Vietnamese specialty. They can't really bring in a lot of like flat top griddles and certain things like that and cook in West Acres. And the Winter Red River Market moves around a little bit, but it's mainly at West Acres. It's more of a monthly event rather than a weekly event in the wintertime. But Saigon cuisine, you can still bring in steam tables and serve stir fries and soups and egg rolls and certain things like that. I just really like the items at Saigon cuisine, just the flavors in the middle of winter with the spice and some of the mint and Thai basil, and some of those flavors really, I think, are good during this time of year. So I'd highly recommend that. But there are others too, and some of the wineries and breweries have sampling, and you can purchase their goods there too. So it's a lot of fun. I think it helps West Acres out too. It's the slow season for a lot of those retailers and vendors. So it really gets things going in West Acres and gives them a little bit of a jump start.
You mentioned Chef Joe a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Chili cook-off at Swing Barrel Brewing. What do you think made Beef Cheek and Bison in Chile, Colorado, the winner?
Well, and I actually went there to shoot some photos and do a little bit of a report for my food media I do, and he was out of it. And wow, wow.
Oh, no.
Almost all the chili was gone, and they gave the public a chance to taste early, which usually it happens after the judging, and that takes a couple hours, but people were really into it. So I got some from Chef Joe afterwards because he made a bunch of extra, so he dropped some off here at the studio, just a little tub to try. I just think that beef cheek with the braised meat, the pulled meat, is really unctuous. It's just savory, and some of the chiles he used, it was really dark, so I'm guessing it was a mix of like guajillo, pasilla, ancho chili, something like that, with some chocolate, maybe a little cinnamon. It just a lot of depth of flavor, and just a few beans, not too many beans. It's like Nephila soup with potatoes. Don't put too many potatoes in Nephila soup. Don't put too many beans in chili. That's my advice.
Rick, did you make it to the soup and pie dinner at St. Joseph's Catholic Church, the classic comfort food event of winter there?
Yeah, and it sounds like you need a little soup, Craig, so I should have brought some for you today. But
chicken noodle soup would taste so good right now, for sure.
And I had some chicken noodle soup and some chili there. What else did I have? Oh, some chicken wild rice. They made homemade popovers, which were really, really good. And then there were like four tables full of pie. The pie selection was phenomenal. It was almost as good as Sons of Norway on Pie Day, which is coming up here. But yes, I like to seek out good pie, and four tables of pie, oh my gosh, and I got to sample a few different things. So that was a lot of fun. And some of these church dinners can be a lot of fun. Fish fries obviously coming up because it's Lenten season. And so I've been looking for fish fries. I went to a few last year that were okay, but I'm really in the search for the really good ones. So I've kind of been researching and doing some internet looking on that.
Rick, we visited about Heart and Soul Community Cafe. They focus on pay what you can meals. What makes that such a unique and special event?
Yeah, and so Chef Joe also works at Blackbird along with Heart and Soul Community Cafe. And Heart and Soul will do, they're basically fundraisers, And they do these in the wintertime at Blackbird, and they're just, these brunches are really good. They're only $12. I usually get an egg bake. You get a salad with it, some roasted potatoes. It's really, really high-end stuff. Biscuits and gravy, but with Chef Joe, there's always a chef twist there, and that's really nice. Lemon ricotta pancakes, just a lot of different fun dishes. The pastries are really good. They're all homemade. For $12, I mean, these food events in the wintertime are extremely affordable and accessible. And so I'd really highly recommend checking out that one. I think they have another one coming up here in a few weeks. Heart and Soul will be posting that on Facebook. So keep an eye out for that.
Rick, you're planning to attend the Hoddish Hoedown at Sons of Norway. That's Saturday, March 8th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. What are you hoping to taste or see?
That should be a fun event. The Sons of Norway here in downtown Fargo is one of my favorite places. Again, affordable, accessible. It's fun in there. I'm guessing there'll be some music, some fiddlers, and that's always fun. I think with these food events, there probably needs to be a little more music and art. That's the recommendation I would give to some of them. But yeah, Sons of Norway, I'm not really sure all the hot dish that's going to be served, but I'm looking forward to going there and sampling, because everything at the Sons of Norway is usually quite good, and those ladies back in the kitchen really know what they're doing. A lot of volunteers there. It's just a fun place to go. The look of it is kind of retro, and I always run into some really fun people there. We've had Sam Y on a couple months ago now, and he's a big fan of the Sons of Norway, and he actually cooks brunch over there sometimes. So it's really a fun place to go, and they really have some fun things to sample. So I'm really looking forward to that event.
Rick, based on everything you've experienced, you're going to invite someone to come to Fargo next winter. What is the one food event they should absolutely not miss?
Well, I think the Kiwanis Pancake Festival has a lot of history here in Fargo. They raise a lot of money for kids. They do a really good job. They serve 7,000 people. Usually their goal is 10,000. And some years they do reach that. I think it just depends on the weather. But that Kiwanis Pancake Carnival at the Fargo Dome is just unbelievable. And the Kiwanis folks do such a good job. They raise money for kids in need. There's music, and you get all-you-can-eat pancakes, and it's just really a fun social event. I run into dozens of people I know. And I know the Fargo Dome isn't the most like conducive place for a big food event, but there's so many people that go to this thing that it needs to be in a large venue like that. So yeah, Kiwanis Pancake Carnival.
Rick, what's coming up on Prairie Plates?
The next few weeks, we should be talking about corned beef and cabbage, which is big this time of year because of obviously St. Patrick's Day. And then maybe get into some fish fry, because we talked about that a little earlier. But during Lenten season, that's obviously a popular thing, especially on Friday nights at the Catholic churches. So I've been looking at Diocese of Fargo, Diocese of Bismarck, Diocese of Crookston to see where the hotspots are at for fish fries at those churches.
Thanks for joining us again on Prairie Plates with Rick Guillon. We air Prairie Plates each and every Wednesday here on Main Street. Have a great week, Rick.
You too, Craig. I hope you feel better.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Jade Presents, bringing David Cross, the end of the beginning of the end, to the Fargo Theater on Saturday, May 17th. Ticket information available at jadepresents.com.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. What kind of parent would intentionally put their children at the center of a potential war? Well, that's the father of Prairie Public's director of radio, Ann Aquist. But as you'll hear from Ann's story at the Tell last August, being witness to the winds of change and being on the ground floor of history was an unforgettable and priceless experience and a fine parenting moment.
So my heart was born on Gießener Straße. And if that sounds like a German name, it's because it is. It's like it's a very common name for like a main street, like for how we're on Main Street here. Very common name for like main streets in very small, unincorporated German villages, which is where I grew up. My parents were teachers, and in 1985, we moved to a village, a magical village, as we like to call it, Polguns to Gießener Straße. Well, fast forward to 1989, and my parents were teachers, and of course they were Cold War kids, and they're like looking at what's going on. The Berlin Wall is like, it's like crumbling, it's tense, and they had sent us to like German public school. And if that sounds weird, it's because it is. All the other Americans, because there was like a ton of military there in this part of West Germany, which was outside of Frankfurt. And they're like, your kids are going to be dumb, and they're not going to learn anything. My parents are like, we don't care. We just want them to be like bilingual and like just, you know, just be like bilingual American kids and Gießener Straße. Okay. And then 1989 like rolls around, and we're like, you know, we're speaking German. We're going to German school. Yeah, hi. You know, we're making friends. My parents are teaching. They're doing their thing, being, you know, groovy Northern Californians. And the Berlin Wall is like, and it's tense. Like, nope. Like, I mean, it could have been World War III. It was like really tense. And so my parents go to my teachers and they say, we're taking the kids out of school. We're going to Berlin. This is like a 5-hour train ride from Frankfurt. And we had actually gone to West Berlin before because in the spring, in April, earlier that year, so the Berlin Wall falls in November of 1989. In April of 1989, my parents decide, it's Glasnost. We should go to the Soviet Union for Easter. This would be so awesome. Have you been to the Soviet Union in April? Have you been to North Dakota in April?
Yes!
Very similar. Very similar. So I'm like 11, you know. So we go on this like wacky trip to the Soviet Union. We don't know anything's come on. Fast forward to October of 1989. I'm like, oh my God, like we gotta go. My parents, Cold War kids, you know, hiding under the desk, you know, like for the air drills, waiting for the nuclear start. They're like, we got it. And they're teachers, right? They're both like history. They both like studied like European history. They're just like, we're going to be on the front lines of history. This is amazing. And my dad was like super, still is, super into photography. So we go. And so we go to Berlin. And it's like tense. Like you can like feel it. And we go to no man's land, and there's the wall, there's the Berlin Wall, and there's the barbed wire. There's the wall where the American sector was. There's a ton of barbed wire, and then there are sentry posts on the other side, the Russian sector, the East German, the East Berlin part, and there's a guard. And my dad's got the, he's like Francis Ford Coppola in Apocalypse Now. And he's pointing to me, and my sister's like, don't look at the camera. Go, keep going. Going like, don't look at the camera. And he's like snapping the pictures. And there's this guard. And he kind of looks like, he reminded me of a guy I had like a crush on at my German school. You know, he kind of looks like Liesl's boyfriend in this, Rolf, remember Rolf? Like your like color hair, you know, super like Daenerys Targaryen, but like male. And he just looks mean. He just looks so mean. And he's got like a skirt and the hat. And he's got like an AK. I didn't know this at the time, but my brother, who was older and was like super, he's like, that dude had an AK-47 with a bayonet attached to it. I was like, ah! And he looks scary anyway. And I'm like actually very conflict averse, which is funny because I'm a manager where you have to deal with conflict all the time. And I'm just like shrinking. My dad's like, go talk to the guard. Go talk to the East German guard with the bayonet. Go. And my sweet little sister, you know, is she just would do whatever you would tell her to do. She's still like, she's like, okay. And so we'd been going to German school, so we spoke German. And he's yelling at us. My father actually has this picture. He has it from, and he's just yelling at us in this very thick East German accent. We actually were like, was sagst du? What are you saying? Was? And he's pointing the gun, and my dad has the picture of this. He's pointing the gun at my sister. My sister's in profile. And you can see, and he's, and my dad's got the picture framed, actually, of him, like, pointing the gun at her. And she starts talking to him. And he's like, where are you from? She's like, Vicenda Americana. We're Americans. And he's like, what? It's like, I've never met Americans before. And he says, you kind of remind me of my sister. And so we came together that day. East met West. And we went back to Giesnerstrasse. And we celebrated the coming together of East Germany and West Germany. So that's my story about coming together.
August summer night, soldiers passing by.
German metal band The Scorpions with Winds of Change, taking us out of an awkward story about witnessing the beginning of the fall of the Berlin Wall. The Tell is a live storytelling event that takes place each month at the 4x4 above Side Street Bar and Grill in downtown Fargo. If you want to tell a live personal story, just show up, put your name in the hat, and if you get called, you're on. Or if you're not that brave, you can simply enjoy and cheer on the tellers. The next event is Thursday, March 13th at 7 p.m., and more information is on the Tell's Facebook and Instagram pages.
The Minot Symphony Orchestra will present an evening of music on Saturday, March 22nd at 7 p.m. in MSU's Ann Nicole Nelson Hall. The performance features the majestic sounds of the organ with Sansaw's Symphony No. 3 and Albinoni's Adagio for organ and strings. Then enjoy performances by two MSU soloists with works by Puccini and Dubois. More information online at minotsymphony.org or by phone 701-858-4228.
This is Dakota Datebook for March 5th. It's basketball tournament time. For over 100 years, basketball has been a cornerstone of North Dakota's sporting scene, uniting players, fans, and entire towns in the pursuit of victory. Join us as we celebrate the history of basketball in the region through Dakota Datebook. As basketball grew in North Dakota, so did the structure of the competitions, including who played whom, where games were held, and how the tournaments were organized. In the early days, many different high school teams competed for the title of the best, but in January of 1914, a decision was made to formalize the process. The State High School Athletic League set up a system where all high schools were divided into four districts. Each district held its own tournament, with the winners advancing to the final contest at the Agricultural College in Fargo, now NDSU. The following year, the final would take place at UND in Grand Forks, and the two schools would alternate hosting. Nelson Savan, the superintendent of Castleton and secretary of the High School Athletic League, organized the tournaments in each district. He sent out letters to all high schools urging them to participate. Only teams that followed the league's rules could claim the state championship. One of the rules was that the regional championships could not be played on the home floor of either team, so games were hosted at state institutions. The regional sites were Dickinson for the Southwestern District, Minot for the Northwestern, Grand Forks for the Northeastern, and Valley City for the Southeastern. After the tournaments in these towns, these district winners, Grand Forks, Minot, Dickinson, and Fargo High School, advanced to the final. In the end, Fargo High School claimed the title, winning the championship in a clean-cut, decisive manner. The Fargo Forum described the team as outclassing all the others, noting that despite having lighter players, it would give any college team in the state a tough challenge. Upon winning, each player was presented with a flag symbolizing the state championship and a gold watch fob in the shape of a basketball. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Sarah Walker. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota. Thank you.
all we have for today's Main Street here on Prairie Public. Thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow on the show, Matt Olean and I will review the Academy Awards. Turns out that Matt did a pretty good job in his predictions, and we'll go over everything there was to talk about relative to the Oscars. And Dave Thompson and I will review the news. That's ahead tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you'll be with us.